Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to the program. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined in studio by Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning, Ed.
And also by Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now. Good morning, Fred.
Howdy, Ed.
Howdy. Howdy. Also joined by Ray Pritchard, founder of Keep Believing Ministries, www.keepbelieving.com. I want to tell you something before I introduce and say hi to Ray. Ray, I want to tell you something, folks, our listening audience. You hear Ray fairly often on this program. One time, Ray and Superman fought each other on a bet. The loser had to start wearing his underwear on the outside of his pants. So I guess we all know who won
so
that fight.
Who won that one?
Ray, I kind of took that. I stole that. That's an old Chuck Norris joke.
Hey, that's beautiful.
But
that's,
I was thinking, as I always do, I try to have some sort of statement of encouragement, Ray, because
it was a close battle. It was I won it the very last second. It was a fluke.
A last second win. Well, Ray, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ed. How are you doing?
Doing good. Are you in Dallas?
Yes, sir. Yes,
Where are frequently out, and I kind of tease you a little bit when I mentioned that Ray's not on the program because he's off doing his little Bible teaching thing, but I really just kidding around. Very, very proud of you and proud to have you with us. You're a board member for the American Family Association. You're a longtime friend of this ministry, but you do teach fairly often. Where are you headed next, and when will you be going?
Well, I'll be in the great city of Tupelo in about 2 or 3 weeks. We're having a board meeting, and I'm speaking there, and then off to, in the dead of winter, I'll be going up to teach the book of Galatians in upstate New York with about 3 feet of snow. And then 2 weeks after that to Florida. Florida's a little easier to handle in the winter than upstate New York.
All right. Well, Ray, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, brother. And
thank you.
Well, Fred, we've got a busy schedule here today. We're going to have Jan Markell, of course. She's a regular on Thursdays, here on Today's Issues. We're also going to have a representative for Operation Christmas Child, Yulia Shabina.
That's going to be a treat.
It really is, folks. This is a wonderful testimony. Mm. And so please stick around for that. Also, we'll have, usual Steve Jordahl. But then for the last 15 minutes of the program today from 11:15, about 10 minutes, we'll have Senator Roger Wicker on. He's a Republican from Mississippi. We want to ask him about two things, if we can squeeze them both in. Definitely want to talk to him about the situation in North Korea. Senator Wicker is a senior member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. We've been talking about that. It's very, very serious developments on that part of the world. But then if we can squeeze it in, maybe talk to him about taxes, because the Republicans are scrambling to try to pass some major tax legislation. So we've got a full schedule. Fred, what's up first in terms of the issues we're going to be looking at?
Well, I had a lead story or two to talk about, but then I look up at the television screen and there's breaking news out of Washington at this hour. I don't think it should come as a surprise to our listeners that there have been reports of tension between the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, and President Trump. Well, the word out of Washington this morning, it's not totally confirmed yet, is that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is on his way out. I'm not sure if he's resigning or he has been told he's no longer needed, but he is to be replaced, according to the reports, by Mike Pompeo, who is now currently the CIA director.
Right.
And the report goes on to say that Mr. Pompeo would be replaced at the CIA by Senator Tom Cotton, Republican from Arkansas. So if all of this is true, and Fox News just flashed up a moment ago that a White House official who is unidentified at this point appears to be confirming this. So in the midst of everything else going on, tax reform, North Korea, everything else, if this is true, this is a major shakeup. As I say, it has been rumored that Rex Tillerson and the president have had their disagreements over foreign policy issues, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and there was even at one point, I remember this was a leak or someone, you know, was just simply saying they overheard this, that wasn't it Rex Tillerson who said, insulted the president?
Yes.
Said he was an idiot or something.
Yes.
I don't.
Something along that line.
So this has been a strained relationship for a while.
Yeah. And you know, we got a little bit of background on Rex Tillerson. A lot of people, of course, became a little bit more familiar with him. He is, I guess, what you would call in the oil industry, an oil tycoon of type prior to coming into government. Fairly well connected with national leaders around the world, particularly in the Arab world, because of his involvement with oil.
Right.
And, you know, I believe probably has played a key role. You know, you remember the president's first trip out of the country was to meet with the leaders of these Arab nations.
Right.
And by all accounts, it was very successful. I think where the differences may have come is with regards to Syria, what has transpired in there. There may have been some differences, relationships with Turkey, that kind of thing. And behind the scenes, who knows where Rex Tillerson has been. He was, at least in the last 48 hours, strangely quiet on North Korea. It has been the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Haley. Nikki Haley, who has commented on it. So it's kind of strange that we would not have heard from Rex Tillerson on North Korea in the last 48 hours, given what has happened. So perhaps even before this program is over today, we will have confirmation on that. But that is the breaking news at this hour out of Washington, D.C.
If indeed this happens, what will be the impact of moving Mike Pompeo over to Secretary of State? I mean, personally, I always thought it was a little bit of an odd fit, even seeing the two guys, I mean, Trump and Tillerson, standing together. Mm. They seemed like the proverbial odd couple, just from body language. So what do you think will be the difference if Pompeo takes over the State Department?
Well, I think, first of all, because there were reports just last week of tension between Tillerson and his staff at the Secretary of State. So there may be part of the chemistry in this move, if it does, again, if it is confirmed, that Pompeo would come in and settle that down, that Tillerson, the report was, that had lost some of the respect from people high up in the Secretary of State's office. But I think the main point has to be a better relationship between Pompeo and the president. When we have the tension that we have right now in the world with regards to North Korea in particular, but also, I mean, there's the relationship with Russia, there is Syria, you know, and everything involved with the parties involved with regards to Syria, pardon me, with regards to Iran. Certainly, I think there was tension between Tillerson and the president on Iran. So one has to believe that the president perhaps has had conversations with Mike Pompeo. They're both at least on the same page as to how the president wants to proceed with this. I think, you know, Tom Cotton coming over to CIA is going to be excellent. Tom Cotton, praised by almost every quarter out there. He's very ex-military. I think he would be a great pick for the CIA. So I think a lot of people, at least on the conservative side of things, are going to see this as very positive.
Well, and I'll say this. Secretary of State is such a critical position because it is so public. It is so visible. Mm-hmm. You can't have mixed signals. But I don't mean want to make this sound trite in either direction, but it's like a pastor of a church not being on the same page with his worship leader.
Yes.
I mean, you can have differences of opinion with the head usher or the secretary, but you've got to be on the same page because it's so public.
Mm-hmm.
And Secretary of State, you can't have someone out there who's not in agreement with the way you want to pursue foreign policy, because that Secretary of State is meant not only to speak to the issues publicly, but meant to communicate the president's foreign policy to other leaders of state. So you can't have those, you know, the president and the secretary of state being on a different page. That's critical.
You know, I was just thinking about it. I mean, Rick Perry is the, he's at the Department of Energy, but really, who knows what he's doing, right?
Right, that's right.
we don't know, and we assume it's great, right? But he's not much in the news. But I think your point is exactly right on. Secretary of State is arguably the single most important cabinet position, and whoever fills that place has to march in lockstep with the president,
right,
whoever it is, and especially Mr. Trump. He values loyalty and
yeah,
compatibility, and he's not going to put up with somebody who's got his own agenda. It's
yeah,
just not going to last.
Now, let me ask you, Fred, just one quick question here, just in terms of logistics. I should know this, but I don't. Mike Pompeo, if he goes over to state, to the State Department, he doesn't have to be approved by the Senate again, does he? I mean, once he's been, you know, he's, you know, CIA director.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to go before the Senate and be confirmed. I mean, it's just like a lateral move, right?
I do believe that's the case.
Okay.
Now, the other, according to the New York Times, which broke this story this morning, and as I say, other news outlets are following up on it now, this transition plan was actually designed by the White House Chief of Staff, General Kelly. And, of course, he took it to the president. So that's kind of interesting, too, that General Kelly, I guess, decided it was time to end that tension with the State Department, between the State Department and the president. So that would be typical of a general from the military,
right,
that we can't, at such a critical time involving such critical issues, that we can't have tension, we can't have personality conflicts out there. And if those two individuals can't get along and read from the same page, then we need to get somebody in the team that can do that kind of thing, so that there is agreement moving forward on how to handle North Korea and how to handle Syria, on how to handle Iran.
Right. Yeah, and the State Department, I think, has traditionally been kind of a world unto itself.
Yes.
You get these deep state, you know, kind of bureaucrats that have been there for several administrations, and you never know who their loyalty is. I'm not saying they're disloyal to the country. I'm just saying you've got to have someone, whether it's a man or a woman, who's heading up the State Department, who can kind of bring those kind of people to heel, if that's possible when you have a bureaucracy with those kind of roots.
Well, one of the things with the State Department that has been well reported through the years, too, they tend to lean left in their politics.
Yeah.
And one of the concerns with President Trump coming into the office was that there wasn't a purging at the State Department,
right,
from the old Hillary Clinton loyalists there.
Yeah.
And so
be a vast difference between the way they see the world and the way a Republican president sees it.
Exactly. So it may be one of the first tasks of Mike Pompeo is to go down the list, and at least the upper echelons of the Secretary of State Department are going to be Trump loyalists, or you don't have a job.
Yeah. All right. What do you got? What else you got?
Oh, gee whiz.
hardly anything else to talk about now, is there?
Well, yesterday we talked a lot in the first half of the show about the firing of Matt Lauer at NBC.
Right.
Probably the most high profile in the media realm yet with regards to allegations of sexual assault, sexual misbehavior in the office. And certainly this morning what we heard from Matt Lauer, and again it was read by his now former co-host on NBC Today, he released a statement saying, "There are no words to express my sorrow and regret for the pain I have caused others by words and actions. To the people I have hurt, I am truly sorry. As I am writing this, I realize the depth of the damage and disappointment I left behind at home and at NBC." And he says he feels embarrassed by this, but he also said that some of the descriptions of what he allegedly did were mischaracterized. So he is admitting wrong. And if there were other reports that came out yesterday, the level of wrong, the level of what happened in his relationships with women in the office is probably the most despicable of what we have heard, probably to the point where we really can't go into details.
Yeah, yet. We kind of decided in our story meeting, and Ray was in on this, that we weren't going to go into the details. You know, and some of these things, I don't know if we're going to get into Garrison Keillor, we might mention that, but some of these things, it seems like a problem of perception, you know, how a woman might have interpreted a touch on the arm or what have you. We're not making light of those kind of things either. All we're saying, there are these different levels, but what we have heard about Matt Lauer, however he's saying some of the things have been mischaracterized, the things that have come out, we can't even talk about. I mean, it's just really
horrible.
Horrible. And, you know, Ray, we've talked about on the show on a number of occasions, especially when, you know, the Harvey Weinstein things were coming out, that it's almost like the country is reaping what it's sown, because when Hugh Hefner died, so many people were applauding him as an icon of the sexual revolution, when all he did was teach men that it's okay to objectify women. And now, without, I'm not trying to make light of this, but the chickens are coming home to roost, because we're finding out what happens when you remove self-control and self-restraint.
Well, this certainly is the result of decades of a pornified culture.
Right.
Really, Hugh Hefner's not the cause. He's the symptom, right?
Yeah.
There's a guy like Hefner doesn't succeed unless there's a market out there for it. He understood which way the winds were blowing, and the culture ate it up. And when you treat women as objects to be played with and then discarded at will, it shouldn't be surprising to us that that men sometimes do very terrible things. And I got to say this about the Matt Lauer apology. I just don't like it when a guy gives an apology and he says, "I'm guilty, but not everything you've read is true." I just wonder why you need to say that. If you are guilty, if you truly feel bad about it, shouldn't you just say, "I was wrong. I am sorry. I'm going to I'm going to take my punishment. I'm going to learn from it," rather than try to make any sort of excuse, because that always sounds to me like you're trying to lessen the blow. If you did it, you did it, and you might as well say it.
I think one of the reasons he may be stating that, because I just want to go back. In his statement, he said, "As I'm writing this, I realize the depth and damage and disappointment I have left behind at home and at NBC. Some of what is being said about me is untrue or mischaracterized, but there is enough truth to these stories that I feel embarrassed." He may be adding, "said about me is untrue or mischaracterized," because at least one of the incidents may rise to the level of charges.
Right.
So he may have, on the advice of a lawyer,
Laying the foundation for a legal battle down the road.
Because one of the incidents described goes beyond what we have heard in other.
Another aspect to this is who all around him was aware of this behavior.
Yeah, oh, I know.
Because if you're with your co-host several hours a day, you're telling me they have no idea that Mr. Lauer acted this way? I find that hard to believe.
And his superiors, you know, I mean, were there times when, you know, women went to those who were above him in the chain of command and said he did this, he did that, and they said, "Well, we don't believe you," or, you know, "Take off," or "We'll take care, we'll handle it." You know, that this, in terms of what you're talking about, Fred, you know, legal ramifications could result in, you know, in other NBC executives having to step down.
Well, there was a news report that said these allegations fell on deaf ears when they were brought to senior management.
Yeah.
And so you have the question, does it take... It sounds like what happened is Monday night, one of the accusers brought their attorney to the NBC headquarters, and I would assume that they said, "Y'all can take care of this, or New York Times and Variety magazine are going to take care of this for y'all," because they were about to hit submit on a news story outlining all of this.
Well, and to be fair, just one quick comment, Ray. To be fair, so people don't accuse us of being one-sided, this same kind of thing happened at Fox News, where the whole environment, including going all the way up to the top, you know, we're not taking care of business in terms of these kinds of accusations. Right. Sorry, Ray, to step on you. Go ahead.
Well, it just seems to me it's completely beyond belief, as Walker said, completely beyond belief that on Monday night, they suddenly discovered all this was going on. Mm-hmm. If even half the news reports are to be believed, or even less than half, clearly this was a kind of open secret at NBC. And let's face it, he was a big-time star making, what, millions and tens of millions of dollars. He was a profit center for the network. So it was easier, and maybe it's part of human nature, it was easier to look the other way than to deal with it until Walker, as you said, maybe she shows up with a lawyer and forces their hand.
Well, there's another chapter of the Matt Lauer story that has broken this morning. Apparently a good friend of Matt Lauer, Geraldo Rivera, in responding yesterday to what happened to Matt Lauer, Geraldo Rivera is in trouble for what he said. The Fox News reporter tweeted Wednesday that the sexual harassment issue is, quote, so red hot right now, there is no room for any thought or opinion, but hang 'em high. And then he added, if news wasn't a flirty biz, then how do we explain so many newsroom courtships that have led to happy marriages? He got in a hole because he's on the payroll at Fox News now.
Right.
And so Fox News Channel right away issued a statement saying Geraldo's tweets do not reflect the views of Fox News. No wonder, because of what happened over there a few months ago, or its management. We were troubled by his comments and are addressing them with him. A few hours later, Rivera apologized, saying he didn't sufficiently explain that this is a horrendous problem, long hidden, and harassers are deviants who deserve what is coming to them. But it was the description of a flirty biz that really got him, almost sounding like, hey, come on. This has been going on.
Boys will be boys, girls will be girls.
This has been going on for a long time in the news business, and it's been all part of it. And then he goes on and adds, and some good marriages have come out of that.
I know.
Well, Ray, this strikes me as there's got to be a proverb out there somewhere that's, you know, the wise man knows when to keep his mouth shut or something, because this, whether or not that's true, there's
How's
probably
go?
Some truth. Go ahead.
Better to be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Because I would tend to believe. Now, it's been a long time, having been in the ministry for many years, too. It's been a long time since I've worked out in the secular world. A lot of our listeners are going, yeah, you ought to see what it's like. I would have to believe there's probably some truth to what Geraldo's saying, but this is probably not the right time to say it.
No. Has this kind of stuff been going on? Well, you know, they used to talk, or they still do in Hollywood, about the, quote, casting couch.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, does that stuff happen? Has it? Yeah, going way back to the 30s and 40s. But you really can't do what Geraldo did,
right. Which
sounded as if he was making light of the allegations. Timing is everything in life, right?
Yeah,
it is.
Maybe he had a point, but he was the last person who should say that, and that was the wrong moment to say it anyway.
Well, speaking of last person, the last person I expected to come up next in the line of fire in the media for this is Garrison Keillor, former host of Prairie Home Companion on public radio.
Yeah.
Now, I disagree with a lot of what public radio does, but I have to admit, Prairie Home Companion was an incredibly good program when Garrison Keillor was hosting it.
And he wrote several Lake Wobegon books.
It was entertaining to listen to his voices and the skits that they did, the music,
right?
All of that. Well, yesterday he was fired by Minnesota Public Radio. He left the Prairie Home Companion show some time ago and went to a lady. The way this goes is that he was consoling a fellow worker one day who was having problems in her life, and he reached over and touched her back. It was summertime. I guess she had a sundress on. It touched bare skin. She jerked away from it. He apologized. She comes back, according to Garrison Keillor, and said, it's okay, I forgive you, and they went on. But then I guess in the last couple of days he had a visit from her lawyer, and he was fired yesterday.
Yeah, so we have the Matt Lauers on one end of the spectrum, and then we have Garrison Keillor. If this is the only thing that he did, wow. So anyway, folks, I guess just keep your hands off.
Yeah.
Just gloves and that's it. All right, folks, we're going to take a break for just a few minutes. When we come back, Jan Markell will be joining us. You won't want to miss it.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman. Our spiritual heritage tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, as well as Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, they fill up several months in advance. So I'm letting you know now, Our June and September tours are ready to sign up for. If you want to register, go to our website, spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com, and check out our June and September 2018 tours.
Here for your encouragement and your walk with God. This is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. For many of us, holidays mean company. It does in our house. And every year, it's the same chaos before they arrive. Dusting, scrubbing, vacuuming, frantically throwing things into closets. Don't judge. We all do that. But the thing is, sometimes we think we have to do the same thing for God. We're embarrassed to think of God entering the messiness of our lives, but that's the problem, because it's impossible to clean up your life for Jesus. That's something only Jesus can do for you. You have to let Him in, just as you are, mess and all. In fact, 2,000 years ago, Jesus did exactly that. He entered into the mess of humanity. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Check out Anchor Devotional today. Just visit getanchor.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. The Wrights High School Panthers had a big win the other day in Evansville, Indiana. After the game, the football team gathered around head coach Andy Hape and offered a prayer. They laid hands on the coach, as is a common practice among Christians. A local newspaper photographer snapped a picture of the poignant moment. Unfortunately, an atheist got wind of the photo, fired off a letter to the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and now the coach is under investigation. The Wisconsin-based atheist group says the coach broke the law by taking part in the prayer. They say it gives the impression the coach promotes and endorses religion. The school district says they're looking into the matter, but they don't seem to believe any rules were broken. First Liberty Institute has offered to take on the coach's case free of charge. And if that happens, well, the out-of-town atheist don't have a prayer. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined in studio by Walker Wildman, Fred Jackson, and from Dallas, Ray Pritchard. And Fred, we have our regular guest, Jan Markell, coming up here in just a moment. But before we do, we do have an update on John Conyers, who's also been caught up in this sexual harassment kind of firestorm.
Yes, Democrat John Conyers from Michigan, 88 years old. He has had multiple allegations made against him in the last week. Going back, some of them 20 years or so. Initially, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi calling him an icon and was somewhat defensive of him. But we understand this morning there's some breaking news that she has now called upon him to step down, to resign. And also this morning we have learned that Congressman Conyers is in hospital. Apparently a family member saying a stress-related illness. As I say,
he's not a young man.
He's 88 years old. He's the longest-serving member of Congress, I believe it is, at this point. So in the midst of all of this, just keep, you know, Congressman Conyers in your prayers. We're not saying he's innocent of these charges, but this is a tumultuous time.
Yeah,
it really is. When you look at what's going on in our country beyond these allegations of sexual misbehavior, but just – it is a difficult time in this country, and as you just alluded to, Ed, you know that some of this is has been coming for a long time, but it's just bursting forth right now.
Well, I want our listeners to pray for Congressman Conyers, and to remember, we've tried to stress this, These people are innocent until proven guilty, until they admit something or something comes out public. We want to make sure, whether they're Republican or Democrat, they do have a right to due process, whether it goes through the legal system or not. I'm talking about the principle involved here. Just because someone is accused doesn't mean they're guilty. So I don't fault Nancy Pelosi for her first instinct in saying he's innocent until proven guilty. We need to maintain that standard because, first of all, none of us would want to be falsely accused. And then second of all of us have sinned. And Fred was asking me for signs. I'm sorry.
Making hand signals in the radio studio gets us distracted.
There were signs and wonders going on. He was making signs. I was wondering what he meant. I'm sorry, folks. And I left it on that thing about we've all sinned, and I don't want anyone to think that I've been accused of anything, and I'm stumbling over saying that. So I just want to make everything clear. So those of you who are watching on Facebook can see me turning red right now. So. All right. Jan Markell is our guest just about every Thursday that we can have her on. She's the founder of Olive Tree Ministries and host of the radio program Understanding the Times. And boy, do we need understanding for the times that we have now that we're dealing with. It's heard weekends on American Family Radio, Saturday from 1 to 2 and Sunday from 2 to 1, both of those times Central. Jan, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Jan,
appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Fred here. I know one Fred, of our reporters talked to you yesterday about reports coming out of a mosque in the Nashville area, and the report is of some statements that have been made by the imam there. Maybe we shouldn't be surprised, very anti-Israel, and I'm paraphrasing here, calling for the annihilation of the Jewish people.
Yeah. Well, remember, I come from, I'm living here in part of the country that is often called, and I say this with deep regret, of course. I mean, little Mogadishu up here in the Twin Cities.
Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota, the Islamic Republic of Minnesota. We have a lot of Somalis, and the mosques, and we have many, many mosques here. I mean, if I were to give a rundown of every Islamic type of organization, be it a mosque, be it even a daycare center, I mean, there's hundreds of that are servicing our Islamic communities, not just the Twin Cities. We have Islamic communities all throughout the state of Minnesota, small towns, medium towns. And that began in the 1990s under Bill Clinton and just continuing today. But I don't think, I think this is coming to a town of almost every one of your listeners. And are all of these people terrorists? Of course not. But the difficulty is trying to discern who's going to be a staunch American citizen and who's going to hate us. And unfortunately, going back to the story you cite there, this is going on all too often, including in our mosques here in the Minnesota area, and that is the imams seem to have a built-in hatred for freedom, for America, for patriotism, for our flag, et cetera, and so they preach destruction, and then some of their people go out and perpetrate it.
Jen, with regard to the statements about Israel, what's the source of that? When this imam in Nashville made those the shocking statements. I mean, shocking to American ears, maybe not so much if you hear others. What's the source of this rabid anti-Israel, anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic hatred?
Well, I think it's end-time anti-Semitism, which the Bible talks about. The Bible suggests that in the last days, both Jews and Christians will come under intense persecution. And, of course, we see that going on in varying degrees. My goodness, in the Middle East, it's unparalleled. And in other parts of the world, and including the Western world, look at parts of Western Europe. That's a whole different, it's just a whole different, it's a whole different paradigm going on in Europe, which used to be a Christian continent and now has become an Islamic enclave over there. But back to your point, these imams, and of course, the attacks on Israel, but and on Christians. And that's why Jews and Christians really need to stand together, because we're more and more we're going to come under intense physical persecution and every other kind of persecution imaginable. I just think it's going to get very intense, much more than it is now.
And, you know, Jan, I've always tried to remain balanced when it comes to the spiritual realm. Some Christians see a demon behind everything. They can't get a parking space. It's a demon. But I look at this kind of thing, and I don't see any other explanation other than the spiritual one you laid out. This is a manifestation of true spiritual warfare in the heavenly realm, the spiritual realm. Because and Tim has said it on this program before, it's hard to explain why Iran hates Israel with the passion that it hates it with, because they don't border. They're really a separate people. That, you know, there are Jews and Arabs who have been in conflict for centuries, but they're Persian. So you say, what's the explanation? Well, it has to be a spiritual war that is engulfing the world, and it manifests itself in the natural when you have imams and individuals making these kind of claims. I think that's a fair explanation of what's happening, right?
Absolutely. I think there are many who feel, and I'm going out on a limb here to state this, I'm not sure how accurate it is, but many believe that Allah is in fact the devil. And if that's the case, and we don't know that it is, but that would explain the intense hatred that's going on, because it seems to be a hatred, and again, this is not every Muslim, but certainly Muslim terrorist groups and individual Muslims seem to have such a intense targeted hatred for certainly the cross, any Christian, but for that matter, anybody who disagrees with them, and for that matter, they're targeting Muslims, as just happened in Egypt. It was, in their mind, an aberration of Islam, the mosque that was blown up last Friday. But it wasn't Islam to their liking, so they went after and killed about 300 fellow Muslims.
Jan, I know you come from the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. Back several months ago, we had the shooting of an Australian woman in that city. And the shooter, and this is without dispute, was a police officer who was recruited from the Somali community in that city.
Right.
He was sitting on the passenger side of the police car. The police had been called there because the Australian ladies thought she heard something out in the alleyway. She approaches the police car. She was in her pajamas or a house coat or something like that. And this Somali police officer was on the passenger side, shot across, and killed that Australian woman.
That's right.
I've heard nothing. The last I heard was the police department up there saying they're investigating the thing. This is months ago.
That's right.
So what is the problem here?
Probably political correctness. The officer was hired in some sort of a program where you hire, shall we say, perhaps some who aren't really qualified to be hired. I believe it was some sort of a plan where you, I don't know the name of the program under which he was hired, but let's just say
affirmative action.
He really wasn't qualified.
It was essentially affirmative action program, kind of like the diversity visa program.
Correct. I don't believe anything. If anything has happened, I've read nothing about it here locally. It was a terrible, terribly tragic incident. Again, it was probably early summer. It might have been June. It might have even been earlier than that. But nonetheless, I know one who spoke out against it was Michelle Bachmann. And boy, she got persecuted for telling the truth there. But she identified it as the affirmative action program, and then she was just absolutely inundated with hate for stating the fact. I mean, she didn't say anything that wasn't true. So, you know, the leftist mind we're dealing with, because the leftist mind celebrates things it should not, and it's just out of control in certain parts of the country. But again, when I say that, I think your listeners need to know things like this come into a neighborhood near them too.
Well, this is, you know, Michelle Bachmann is certainly no stranger to that kind of blowback. She's a very courageous woman and does tell the truth. She's a strong Christian, and as every Christian should, she tells the truth. And so, and you know what? You're a courageous woman too, Jan, because you take on all these issues as well. Jan Markell has been our guest. She's founder of Olive Tree Ministries. She's host of the radio program Understanding the Times. It is heard weekends on American Family Radio, Saturday from 1 to 2 Central Time, Sunday from 12 to 1 Central Time. Jan, what's up next in terms of scheduling and guests?
Well, and I'll just make it real brief, but I'm glad you asked, because this weekend I talked to Ron Rhodes, Dr. Ron Rhodes, formerly the Bible Answer Man, and we talked about some apologetics that I know the listeners will really love. The following weekend, I'm just going to insert this, if they could mark their calendars, the following weekend, I'm going to be talking to Trevor Loudon, and Trevor has got the most incredible film called Enemies Within. And gentlemen, we're talking, I hear you guys talking politics a lot, and I do too, and Trevor has kind of gone undercover and exposed some of the antics of the left, and it is extremely revealing, and your listeners need to listen and act accordingly.
All right, Jan, thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right.
I know.
She is. She's courageous. You know, she's up in the Minneapolis area. That is a not a conservative. That's not the Bible Belt.
No.
And when she takes on and tackles some of these issues,
The fears are very real, too. She has told me that when she holds a conference, she holds a Bible conference every year, she now has to spend thousands and thousands of dollars on security.
Yeah.
Right.
Just so the delegates there will be safe.
Yeah. It's a strange time we're living in. It's the result of a decaying culture. And when that happens, darkness comes in.
Yeah.
And Christians need to be aware of that. And like she was talking about, need to be aware of the spiritual warfare that we are engaged in. This is not a picnic anymore.
No.
It's not an easy walk through the kind of spiritual park. So
I wanted to mention two things real quick, Ed, before we move on. The Dow Jones has hit 24,000 a day, which is a record. That's a record, right?
That's
right.
A brand new record.
Brand new record.
Yeah, but the economy is struggling, you know, according to the Democrats.
So the Dow has hit 24,000 right now, and then John McCain is a yes on tax cuts. So those are two big news items today.
Yeah, and we'll need to talk to when Senator Wicker is on. Ask him about that. I mean, that's good news in terms of Senator John McCain.
Yes, so. It is.
All right. Well, we have a special guest in studio, Yulia Shubina. Did I pronounce that right?
You did a great job.
Great job. Okay. With Operation Christmas Child and The Greatest Journey. And Yulia has been all over American Family Radio today. We've been privileged to have her in studio with us and here in the building. And she addressed our staff this morning with some very touching comments. Welcome to, now you've been here before though, right?
This is my first time.
First time.
It's a privilege to be here.
Okay. I thought we had someone in studio, maybe it was somebody different. Okay, all right. So I'm catching up.
There are several of us with stories.
Yes, and that is good news. Tell us a little bit about what you do with The Greatest Journey in Operation Christmas Child, but we really want to hear your story because we heard it this morning and it was very touching and inspiring. Well, we want to encourage Christians to get involved with something.
Thank you. So my name is Yulia, and you probably hear an accent. I am not from here originally. I grew up in Central Asia, and first I was impacted by the ministry of Samaritan Spurs when I was just 9 years old, living in Central Asia, and I received an Operation Christmas Child shoebox gift. And today I have the privilege of serving full-time with this ministry and to tell people not only about what God has done in my life, but also about the follow-up discipleship program that has been developed back in 2009. And what it is it doesn't end with a shoebox gift. After children have received shoebox gifts, they are invited to go through this 12-lesson discipleship program. And during the course of 12 lessons, they learn who Jesus Christ is. They also learn how to have a personal relationship with him and also how to share the good news that they received with their friends and their family. And so this program, we have been able to do it in 98 countries around the world, which I think is a pretty incredible what God has allowed us to do.
Well, tell us a little bit more about The Greatest Journey. You said it's 12 lessons. What sorts of things are covered? in those lessons?
That's a great question. So every lesson is based on a story from the Bible, and you can divide the program itself into three categories. So the first six lessons focus specifically on teaching children about the Creator God, then the problem of sin, but also the great Savior who came down to save people from sin. And then the second part focuses on having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. One of my favorite lessons is actually lesson 8. It focuses on Mary and Martha, and Mary choosing what really is important, a relationship with Jesus. And the final lessons 10 through 12 focus specifically on how to share their faith that children get to have with Jesus Christ, with their friends and family. And in fact, we have so many incredible impact stories of not only children who go through the greatest journey being impacted by it, but also entire families saved. So if you allow me, I would love to share one of those stories with you today.
Go right ahead.
So this story actually takes place in Central Asia, and it's about the boy by the name of Daniel. He came to an outreach event where he received an Operation Christmas Child shoebox gift and also heard the gospel of Jesus Christ. He then was invited to complete the Greatest Journey program. And during the course of the program, he accepted Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior. And when he graduated, he received a New Testament in his native language. Well, he was so excited to have a New Testament in his native language, he ran home and he began reading all the verses that he learned during the course of the program to his family. So imagine that now his two sisters and his mom accepted Christ, and all together they go to church. And it all started with a simple Greatest Journey lesson.
Well, wow. And the fascinating thing, I don't know, is this story from, I know you cannot tell what country you're from.
That's
because
right.
of the danger that it would pose maybe to others, family members as well, or even, you know, there are reasons for that. So, but
right.
is this story from your country? Because you shared this morning that, even though you can't say the country, you shared this morning that the country you're from, it's illegal to be a Christian and to have a Bible?
And own a Bible, that's right. Yeah, so this
So is this young, man in danger for becoming a Christian, where he's at?
In a lot of those countries, sensitive countries, yes, they are in danger. But what's so beautiful, so many of them are so bold to share the faith with their friends and family so that other people can hear about the hope and love that they have in Jesus Christ. Yes, they're in danger, but they're not stopping. And God is continuing to push the gospel forward, and even in some of the darkest places around the world.
A couple of years ago, I traveled with Operation Christmas Child on a kind of a test run, a trial, to the country of Grenada, and I believe it was in August or September, just to kind of see how it would work when they deliver the shoeboxes. And the Greatest Journey was new then, so they were introducing it. But what I loved most about it is you don't present the shoeboxes and then leave some booklet with kids that where they don't know what to do. You for the most part, Operation Christmas Child partners with local churches
That's
and
right.
pastors. And so all year round, these kids have someone to look up to, someone to disciple them. So it's very hands-on, and it's not just a curriculum. There are actually people, pastors, Christians, locals that help disciple the children, and that was my favorite part.
That's right. Yes, like you rightly noted, we don't just come in, give curriculum or give materials. We equip the local church because, like you said, they're the ones who live among those children, mm-hmm. who live in those communities, and they're the ones who are able to have the follow-up and continue to disciple children even beyond the Greatest Journey, even after children graduate from the program.
Mm-hmm. Our guest is Yulia Shubina. She and we wanted her to stay here to the top of the hour. She's with Operation Christmas Child and the Greatest Journey. I know Fred has a question, but folks, I want to. Some of you are probably chomping at the bit, saying, "Listen, I want to get involved in this. I want to do something." Well, I'm glad you feel that way because we do have a call to action. We are asking you, our AFR family, to help us reach 12,000 children with the gospel, and we do have donation suggestions because $6. Provides one child who's received a shoebox gift the opportunity to participate in the Greatest Journey through a local church, and it covers a student booklet, graduation certificate, New Testament Bible with selected stories from the Old Testament, teacher training, resources, all the things that Yulia has been discussing and the impact it makes. So $6 makes sure teachers have the resources they need to lead the class. So If you were to give $60, for example, it would reach 10 children. $150 reaches 25. A generous donor has made available matching funds, so every gift that you give is doubled. So how do you participate in this? Call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or you can donate online at AFR.net. The stories you've been hearing, the explanation, we haven't even gotten, I don't even know if we'll have time to get into Yulia's testimony herself, but these are children whose lives have been impacted forever. So please get involved. We are asking you to help us reach 12,000 children with the gospel. 877-616-2396, or you can donate online at AFR.net. I will give that information again before we close out this segment.
Julia, is that, do I have that right?
Pretty close. Yulia.
Close enough.
Yulia.
Yes.
You know, we have thousands of people listening at this moment who have just completed doing their shoeboxes. And we went out and did some of those. And the store we went to, you pretty well key in. Everybody's doing the same thing. They were hitting it towards the last
You know who's shopping for shoeboxes.
Oh, exactly. It's so. But here was one of the interesting things, folks. Julia.
Yulia.
I'll get it before you.
Instead of a J, it's a Y.
Yulia. A Y. Yulia.
He's from Canada. We cut him some slack.
Yeah, that's right. But this morning, now you got your shoebox about 16 years ago.
That's correct, 16.
You brought in with you a couple of the things that came out of that shoebox. You kept them all these years.
I have.
And you connected to how important that box is. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I was growing up in a country that was recovering from a fall of the Soviet Union. I specifically remember the toys that my sister and I had. They were pretty worn down, pretty low quality. So receiving a shoebox gift from abroad was so exciting. And like you said, today I still have some of the items, and I hope it just gives our listeners a glimpse into how much something so simple as a stuffed toy or a letter could mean to a child halfway across the world who would receive those shoeboxes.
Yeah. And the letter was fascinating because there was a letter attached to the box.
That's right.
And you started corresponding back and forth.
Yes, the letter was actually, as much as I loved the toys, the school supplies, honestly, every item that came in my shoebox gave, the most significant was by far the letter, because that's what, in the letter, the girl who packed my shoebox gift, she wrote that she was praying for me and that God loved me. And for a nine-year-old, Yulia, let me tell you, this were big news, especially because I was living in a sensitive country where the gospel is not allowed to be openly proclaimed. So for me, when I read those words, even though at that time I didn't fully understand the meaning, I will never forget the feeling that they left in my heart. And like you said, we began corresponding. And for me, as I was growing and exchanging letters with the girl in the United States, it was so exciting to have a friend, a pen pal in the United States. But what was so significant about this friendship, that every single one of her letters she closed with that same sentence, "I'm praying for you and for your family." And it wasn't until years later, after I came to the United States for school, after I accepted Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, that I looked back and realized God used something so simple as a shoebox gift and letters of a girl from halfway across the world to plant one of the seeds in my life to bring me into a personal relationship with his son, Jesus Christ, years later.
Well, folks, if you want to give to this, we are giving you the phone number one more time here, 877-616-2396. $6 makes sure teachers have the resources they need to lead the class. We are talking about the greatest journey that follows up Operation Christmas Child. You can donate online at AFR.net. We want you to help us reach 12,000 children with the gospel. A generous donor has made available matching funds, so every gift you give is doubled. Yulia Shubina has been our guest. Yulia, thank you so much for being on with us, and thank you for your boldness in sharing.
Thank you for having me.
All right, folks, we're going to take a five-minute break for news. When we come back, Steve Jordahl will be here later this segment. Senator Roger Wicker, you don't want to miss that.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.